Rabbit, rabbit. Good evening. Gamar Jumbo Rustavelli. This is FeelPod.com coming to you from our studios high atop Prospero's Books and Cafe. Today is Thursday, the 1st of March, 2012. On this date in 1562, 23 Huguenots were massacred by Catholics in France, marking the start of the French War of Religions. In 1565, the city of Rio de Janeiro was founded. In 1642, Georgiana, Massachusetts, now known as York, Maine, became the first incorporated city in the United States. In 1781, the Continental Congress adopted the Articles of Confederation. In 1811, leaders of the Mamluk dynasty, many of whom were born in Georgia, by the way, are killed by Egyptian ruler Muhammad Ali, not the boxer. In 1845, President John Tyler signs a bill authorizing the state of Texas, the United States, to annex the Republic of Texas. Sorry about that. I don't really know how to edit, so there will be no editing there. So Texas. In 1893, Nikola Tesla gives the first public demonstration of the radio in St. Louis, Missouri. The Battle of Adowa in 1896, an Ethiopian army defeats the Italian forces, ending the First Italo-Ethiopian War. In 1947, the International Monetary Fund begins financial operations. In 1953, Joseph Stalin suffers a stroke and collapses, dies 4 days later. In 1961, President Kennedy establishes the Peace Corps. In 1966, the Ba'ath Party takes power in Syria. In 1981, IRA member Bobby Sands begins his hunger strike in Mays Prison. In 1990, Steve Jackson Games in Austin, Texas is raided by the United States Secret Service, prompting the formation of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. If you are not a member, you should be. It is www.eff.org. In 1994, Georgia joins the CIS, Commonwealth of Independent States. In 2001, a visa regime is introduced between Georgia and Russia. They started it. In 2002, the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan begins, called Operation Anaconda. In 2003, the International Criminal Court holds its inaugural session in The Hague. And in 2008, the Armenian police clash with peaceful demonstrators at a rally protesting fraudulent presidential elections. Today, it is just me, Mark Mullen, and Cameron Christensen. No Will Dunbar. Sorry about that. Everything we say is our own opinion and doesn't have anything to do with our work or anything else. So, from our listener, a license for the Big Gold Mine was put up for auction. I'm saying that with air quotes, as in auction, by a legal entity of public law, or LEPL, as it's known in the trade, under the Ministry of Natural Resources, and was sold for 110.5 million lati. The only participant in the auction was Mining Investments. Who won? Surprise, surprise. They have the right to extract minerals from a part of Sheeta Kartli for 27 years. It's quite a big area. It's 1,230 hectares, a 27-year license for the exploration and extraction of gold, copper, and other precious minerals. Right now, I think the field of Madneuli and the other field, I heard, is $15 million a month is coming out in gold. And I don't know whether that's gold and copper, just gold. Starting price of the auction was $110 million, with bidding steps of $500,000 lati. An advance payment estimated at $22 million. $22 million is 20% of the starting price.
To be paid now.
To be paid now, exactly. There was one bidder, LLC Mining Investments. Company registered the 13th of February, 2012. Arvidas Brusokas, a Lithuanian citizen, is the owner of 100% of the shares. That, if anybody wants to Google around and find out about the guy, it is Arvidas Brusokas, evidently spends quite a bit of time in St. Petersburg. He's the director of the company. Legal address is Gudiashvili Square number 40114 in Tbilisi, Tbilisi. The auction ended a minute after the speaker announced that LLC Mining Investments has won with a license, won the license for 110 and 500 million, the amount of which is one step above the starting price. There's a great Transparency International Georgia post about it, so check it out. Here's how it was summarized for tobealpod.com in an exclusive. One, you provide an interest-free loan to the government for 2 years. Two, the original owner can still mine for 2 years, rape and pillage, as well as leave you with any number of liabilities. Three, Sakthadisi 1, which contains approximately half the gold in any calculated reserve to date, is excluded now from the license. Four, Sakthadisi reserves calculated by you may mean the government calculated value could be higher than that paid at auction, which provokes a clause whereby you must pay the difference. Five, if point 3 does not apply and the calculated price is lower than the final bid, then the government does not pay you back the difference.
So, I mean, according to that assessment, then anybody who participated in the auction is an idiot.
Or is somehow friendly with the government and there's a high degree of trust, you know? I mean, who knows? Everything that I've heard about this, I mean, I asked when they have announced these things, you know, from things like, you know, big international mining companies. They said, absolutely, we'd be interested in something like this. But if a tender, the way that a government signals that it's an inside deal is how long the tender process is.
In this case, 6 weeks, right?
Right. So. And if it's less than 6 months, they said 6 months is the amount of time that it takes to do the due diligence and figure everything out. And if it's less than 6 months, then everybody in the mining industry knows that it's that's the way they say, you know, please don't bother, you know. The TI representative that went there, when they said they were from TI, the guards were like, well, I don't know. I've got to check with my boss and, you know, the guy with the key is gone or whatever else. And then somebody came down and it all got a little bit sort of complicated. And the person from TI said, look, you know, you don't let me in. I mean, first of all, it's against the law. I mean, it's open and public. And, you know, so they said, okay, fine. And they got in there. And then the whole process just took 2 or 3 minutes. There was a journalist from Liberali there, but that was it. There was somebody who'd been at the previous license discussion a couple of months ago.
For an unrelated auction.
For not
different.
Officially related, but, you know, it was another mining, you know, deal. So who knows? I mean, of course, everybody says this is Kobanakopia, who's sort of the mining magnate and controls Madoli now. So, you know, I don't know. Anyway, not a good thing. It would have been nice to bring in a big international mining company and have the whole thing be a little bit more, I don't know, international, not so much, you know, among the team. But all right, there it is. There's a great thing to read. Actually, I don't know where it was published, but by Tom Duvall, called How Gogol Explains the Post-Soviet World. It compares Georgia to the Brothers Karamazov. I highly recommend everybody finding it. Misha delivered a speech in Parliament on Tuesday. He said that the national movement has the ability to stay in power for many more years. Sidestepped the question about whether he would become the prime minister. He said the upcoming election should be more fair than ever in the history of Georgia. Interestingly, he spoke, as always, sort of off the cuff, you know, just taking a peek every
Danger.
Once in a while.
Danger. But,
he spoke, you know, off the cuff, looking at the teleprompters when he was talking about, you know, everything, which was very much like, now we're going to deal with poverty. Surprise, surprise. A few months before the election, we're going to start dealing with poverty.
Thought it was the year of healthcare.
But when he started talking about democracy and plurality and elections is when he started actually reading the stuff. So, I don't know. Wanted to be careful there.
Well, and they also do what the opposition response, or at least have an opportunity for question and answer. And Jondi Bahaturi.
Well, right. Yes, we got to cover Jondi here. Now, he also mentioned in the speech the visa regime in Russia. He said, you know, that it should be ended. Now, interestingly, it ended as he spoke, I mean, because a friend of a friend came in and said that they were telling anybody from Russia that you no longer need visas. Like, it was somehow implemented instantly upon the command.
Is that by presidential order? I mean,
one would think that it would be written down somewhere and that it would need to change, but, you know, I have no idea. And Reuters wrote about this, saying that it was to attract Russian investment. You know, who knows? I mean, you know, magnanimous gesture. And I think Georgia's been very smart to say, you know, nobody needs visas anyway. I mean, there's been some talk about, oh, what about this Iranian situation? You can let anybody in. But, I mean, let's be real. But nobody really checks anyway. I mean, it's not like having visas is really much of a check. You know, you can always have a list at the border anyway, you know, and so I think Georgia's quite smart to just say no visas for practically everybody.
Well, not to mention everything's computerized now, so I mean the efficiency is already kind of built in. So I mean you have access to databases and whatnot that I'm not sure a visa regime would really offer you any more security.
Yeah, I agree. So, yes, the big hullabaloo was with Jandi Bhagaturia, who accused Misha and his family of elite corruption. Misha called him stupid, a fool, and then there was a big discussion about mud. Saying, rolling in mud is your natural state. There's really good mud at the spa. The parliamentary marshals then accompanied... He said the parliamentary marshal should accompany you to the spa, where I will ask them to make a really good mud bath for you. To put you in really high quality mud and knead you properly, as in bread, all your fantasies will fully disappear. I mean, it was pretty aggressive.
Wow, was this televised?
Evidently, yeah.
That's amazing, because the reporting that I read certainly overlooked the nuances of the details of that.
Well, father's...
Right, he's a manager, not the owner of a balneology thing. That was reported on.
Some mud spa thing. Yeah, I mean that I don't know exactly what was said, and I was not present there, but
well, apparently he stepped out.
Yeah, he stepped out while Bhagaturia was speaking. I mean, I got to admit, Jandi Bhagaturia is one of those guys that he sort of managed somehow to sort of recycle himself in politics for ages, but he's like this old sort of, I don't know how to describe it other than sort of Zveli Beachy guy who just sort of keeps showing up, and I'm not sure that he's, you know, a useful sort of policy, you know, advocate of the opposition. That said, if Misha indeed said those things that we heard he said, that's pretty harsh.
Well, his statements are certainly interesting, but I think that I at least remember in the last couple of years pretty frequently hearing that the response is, or there's always a question from the floor that says, we hear that there's elite corruption, you know, all this great stuff about, you know, petty corruption, but elite corruption. And Saakashvili always wins points on this, actually, because no one has any information really to use. And so, I mean, that's why the first story that we talked about with the mining thing, I mean, perhaps there's a lot of assumptions that have to be made or jumps that have to be made in order to say that that's elite corruption, but it seems like there is some justification for these accusations.
Well, the last time when elite corruption was said, he said, give me one example.
Right.
And so this time, what's his name? What is it, Saakashvili? Alassania's MP, I think it's Saakashvili or Saakadze or something, had pictures of houses of, you know, various big shots in the government's houses or those close to the government. And said, and it was reminiscent of what Misha did 11 years ago, and he was justice minister and said, a live televised government meeting when he said that, when Misha said, you know, there's elite corruption and we have to deal with this and stuff like that, and everybody said, no, there's not, give us examples. And then Misha pulled out pictures of the houses on Saidima Hill and Sabratalo where a bunch of, you know, corrupt jerks had houses in what became affectionately known as Mother-in-Law Hill, because everybody then realized that they had registered under the names of their mother-in-laws, which nobody could really sort of trace the last name of. So those are, you know, that's in, interestingly, the Free Democrats, Alassania's party, did a sort of response, a fairly immediate response to the speech, and talked quite a bit about this. The other thing that was interesting is for the very first time, there was a Twitter hashtag for the speech that the president designated, and it was live tweeted by several different people. So if you want to find out what was said about the speech, the best place to do it, and this is the first time I know of an event in Georgia that has a hashtag that will really tell you, you know, what's going on. So you want to find out about the speech, the way to do it is to look at a hashtag SpeechGovGE. So that's SpeechGovGE on Twitter, and it will tell you, you know, all of the various commentary about it and whatever else. The Chamber of Control has fined Georgian Dream, which is Ivanishvili's thing, whatever it is. What is it?
Movement.
It's not a party. I don't know. Whatever it is. That one of its donors and employer of the donor, Kartu Shvenebeli, with has charged them 200,000 lari each because Georgian Dream refused to return a suspicious donation of 20,000 lari to the head of Kartu Shvenebeli. Georgian Dream is going to continue the legal fight. Ivanishvili promises that the Georgian ministries will continue, soldiers will continue participating in peacekeeping missions if his coalition comes to power.
This channeling money through individuals is quite interesting because it, of course, relates back to the political party finance law changes. And what I'd heard is that they essentially were, well, in at least one case, I don't know if it was a specific case, they were giving a bonus to somebody who worked in a company owned by Ivanishvili, and then that bonus the next day was delivered to the political movement of Ivanishvili. And so the Chamber of Control has come out and said, obviously, that's illegal, and so you have to return it. And the interesting thing that I think is that this one is 10 times more. So there are two fines of 10 times more than the amount that was supposedly illegally channeled. Now, I wonder if it's a fixed fee, because then you could just make it, you know, a lot more and then get fined a smaller amount.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I know. Yeah, I know there was discussion that the head of parliament, Dato Bakradze, was using the Batumi Theater, and it was given to him for free for a campaign event, and that therefore, you know, he should pay. Therefore, that's a donation, and you know, whatever else. Media.ge reports that Maestro wants 2,200,000 lari from Erosi Kitsmanishvili. According to the lawyer of the TV company, Dmitry Gabunia, they will appeal in the city court. They're also suing the Ministry of Interior Affairs because police saw Maestro property being carried out by car but did not stop it. Maestro journalists managed to save only 6 cameras and 2 microphones. Rustaviori, the TV station, is going to launch a new political talk show, according to Alia, yesterday, reporting that, or 2 days ago. According to to Alia, the new talk show will be entitled Position, and it will start in late March. It's going to be hosted by Nino Shubladze, Deputy Director General of Rustavi 2, and will air every Friday after Kurieri, their newscast.
I wonder if that's going to start other channels to also have political talk shows now, too, because obviously for a little while, we haven't had any real political talk shows.
A lot of political talk shows.
You think? I mean, yeah. Gosh, I remember maybe I'm not updated, but I remember 2007, 2008, there was nothing, that they'd canceled all of them.
Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't know. I know there's the opposition ones, but I can never remember the names of the people that are on them. Transparency International Georgia lists a number of cases where political parties and their members have been given gifts for political purposes, which violates the newly adopted election legislation. For example, on the 2nd of January, the state governor of Imereti Region Lasha Makatsaria and Kutaisi Mayor Gheorghe Tevdoradze handed presents to the families of those fallen in the 2008 war in Kutaisi. They are called on the Chamber of Control accordingly. Last Wednesday night was the initial brainstorming. Last night was the initial brainstorming session for a maker space in Tbilisi, a space where programmers, artists, designers, electrical and mechanical engineers, and anybody who likes to make things can meet up in what will basically be a giant workshop. If you are interested in being involved in this, write our email address, tblpod@gmail.com. That's tblpod@gmail.com. With Makerspace in the subject line, make yourself be known, and you can be included in the group that is planning this incredibly cool thing.
Did you get some young people?
We got a lot of young people.
Good.
And some not so young people. It was, lots and lots of people. It was great. Very international. So especially, you know, anybody from neighboring countries, we had a lot of people from all over the place there. It's pretty cool. Fantastic article in EurasiaNet on how the Reform Campaign Finance Law might affect freedom of expression as well as donor funding of NGOs. TI reports about program budgeting, which was supposed to happen in 2012. They've been talking about program budgeting for a long time. You know, the idea being that it's not just going to be some regular line item that sort of, you know, gets carried through each budget each time, that they're, you know, that you have to say what you're going to do with the money and that sort of stuff. But in reality, the government keeps giving money to the ministries and not to individual projects that say what you're going to do with it. I mean, program budgeting is, its proponents say that it's a serious and very cool thing, but I mean, it is a significant shift in how state funding is sort of conceived, and it seems as if it's not really being taken very seriously. Ministries can now adjust their budgets with just the consent of the Ministry of Finance than with Parliament, as was needed before, and it seemed as if the whole thing is, as they say in the UK, sort of going pear-shaped.
Well, my favorite thing in the Georgian state budget is the line "schwa" for other, which is, yeah, I mean, Lord knows, and it's in every budget practically, at least it used to be in every budget. Well, so yeah, I mean, the fluctuation or the ability to just change your budget fairly easily, I think, is going to be detrimental. But also, I find it just amazing that they weren't doing this type of project or program budgeting before anyway, that it was just some sort of...
Well, they had, I mean, it was, I don't know who they, you know, talked it over with, whatever else, but I mean, they've been talking about the shift for 3 years
or
something.
Sure, it was like USAID or someone gave technical assistance.
Very serious thing and da-da-da, but I don't know, it doesn't really seem to be going anywhere, at least as far as I can tell. And also, you know, I mean, as the Parliament has become weaker and less serious and more under the thumb of you know, executive institutions, you'd think that they wouldn't really mind having the Parliament be more involved. But as the Parliament becomes weaker, you know, at the same time, there's even less, you know, parliamentary oversight over the budgeting, which, you know, is sort of, I don't know, just because it's convenient or something. I don't know. It's a little frustrating.
They would at least keep them as the rubber stamp.
Yeah, at least keep things. Well, I don't know how to say it, but yeah, exactly.
I said it.
Okay, good. Thank you. We mentioned last time that the Lien Removal Act is being repealed, which was announced last Sunday in Batumi by the Business Association of Georgia, which is fantastic. There's an excellent TI post about how TI essentially sent letters to all the banks to say, was that used on you? Nobody replied except ProCredit, which very kindly said, no, it has not, and Cartu, which said, yes, it has been. And the amount of assets that were assessed was very, very significant. And, you know, the rumors were, of course, and I, you know, friends of friends were told, look, we're just doing this to Cartu and then we'll get rid of it. And it seems as if that's more or less what happened. I mean, we don't know that because the other banks didn't respond, but certainly Cartu got hit pretty hard. In the way in which they did the auctions, I mean, the state sort of took over all of the stuff, it seems like, all of the various things that Cartu had liens on. The Election Commission of Skhinvali has registered South Ossetian ambassador to Russia, Dmitry Medoev, as the candidate. Experts say that the Kremlin has substituted Anatoly Biblov, who lost the previous election in the breakaway region, with Medoev. At the same time, no opposition candidate has been registered, reports Kavkazky Uzel. Elections will be held on the 25th of March, and four candidates will run.
All men, yeah?
I would guess, yeah. Men. Allah seems to be, I mean, who, is she
radar, still,
yeah, yeah, I mean, is she in the hospital, I guess? I don't know. That's just really sad how that whole thing has happened. Parliamentary elections will be held in the de facto Republic of Abkhazia. Not the de facto Republic of de facto Abkhazia, but the de facto Republic of real Abkhazia on the 10th of March. Radharami will launch this Saturday in Batumi its new book. The first book was called Fast Forward. which is about global warming. Radarami is an incredibly excellent program that I'm involved with that translates cool, hip, interesting books into Georgian each month. And they come out on the third of the month. This Saturday in Batumi is the launch of the second book, which is Globalization and Its Discontents by Joseph Stiglitz in Georgian. It is available at many independent bookstores all over the country, including Biblos bookstores, as well as libraries. So, and it's only two lotti. So any listeners that want to get a cool book as a present for a Georgian friend that prefers to read in Georgian rather than English, they are two lotti at big Biblos bookstores.
Does it look nice, too, or is it, like, really small print and paperback with really thin pages, too? Like, so much of...
It's a beautiful design and nice pages and big print, and they're really, really good translations too. So
that's good.
I think it's definitely worth worth taking. If you are interested in the program, particularly if you want to tell Georgian friends, particularly those outside of Tbilisi, just Google Radarami, which is Romeo Alpha Delta Alpha Romeo Alpha Mike India. Radarami. Google Radarami or go to www.radarami.com or search Radarami on Facebook.
I can't resist. It's so nice that people support you for this.
Yes, and we'd like to thank all of our donors, especially the Black Sea Trust.
You're bad.
Yurgi Lomsadze writes in his Tamanad Tales on Eurasianet.org, no connection with the European Partnership Foundation.
Or the Eurasian Partnership.
Or the Eurasia, whatever. All right. Just Eurasianet, no connection. Tamanad Tales on how anyone using a Georgian IP address was blocked on Medvedev's official, that's not the Ossetian presidential candidate, but the president of Russia, at least for the next few days. Medvedev's official Facebook page, after some of them demanded withdrawal of Russian troops from Georgia on the 23rd of February, the day Russia celebrates the Homeland Defenders Day.
Yeah, apparently they couldn't respond fast enough, and so what they did was they just blocked all IPs from Georgia. And then what happened, apparently, was that you got some Russians who actually were supporting similar statements and threw them back on.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, things are getting spicy in Russia. You know, hats off to all the demonstrators and those that were holding hands around Moscow. That's really, that's good to... Good thing, and particularly Boris Akunin. No need to mention that he was born in Zestaponi, but that his real name is Skartashvili. But you know, anyway, that's a very cool bunch. The Minister of Energy and Natural Resources, Alexander Kitaguri, said to a Korean newspaper on a trip to Korea that Georgia wants nuclear power, and the time for nuclear power is now. He was there on a visit. There will be a Georgia-Korea business forum to be held in a couple of months. Minister of Finance, Dmitry Gvinadze, and the Minister of Regional Development and Infrastructure, Ramos Nikolaishvili, visited the head of office of the Asian Development Bank in Manila. They discussed funding for allocation of construction of new roads and hydroelectric stations, as well as rehabilitation of the water supply. Georgia's debt to the ADB is currently $362 million. That's a lot. You know, that's pretty high. And from what I've heard, the ADB is not quite so bureaucratic as some of the other multilaterals. I don't know if that's true. I've just heard that it's sort of easier to get the money in there, a little more laid back, and you know.
I really wonder, though, about the combination of hydropower and nuclear energy generation. It seems bizarre because they've constantly, I mean, you hear this buzz all the time about how much water resources Georgia has and how they can generate more energy, enough energy for export, and they haven't really capitalized upon that yet. And then why would they go into nuclear?
I don't know. I mean, nuclear doesn't make sense. I mean, it's such a security threat from a million different angles, and I don't know that Georgia has much of a competitive advantage. It's an earthquake zone. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't seem to be very logical. I don't know. Maybe that was just a way of saying something to the Koreans that they wanted to hear. I do know that there have been Koreans looking at very big hydro investments, and hydro is a particular interest of Prime Minister Nika Gilaudi. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was an off-the-cuff remark. Matt Braiza, who was very intimately involved in Georgia, very close relationships with Georgian government officials, and was then ambassador to Azerbaijan, but the collection of Armenian lobbying groups blocked him from being confirmed by the Senate, so it was a recess appointment, so he was only there for a year, and has now left. And as far as I know, he has left the Foreign Service, at least if I understood that correctly.
I don't know.
He gave an interview to a Turkish newspaper and said he was in Istanbul, talked about Nagorno-Karabakh and U.S. attitudes towards these issues. His wife is from Turkey, and I think they moved to Istanbul, which would be cool if he was in this region. What I read about the article, not being able to read Turkish, indicated that he'd left the Foreign Service, but I don't really know. Hmm. Interpress News reports that a new international cooperation agency of Georgia is going to be established under the Prime Minister's office. The new agency will promote Georgia's governmental reforms and innovations internationally.
The World Bank gave him a good head start.
Exactly, with that World Bank, you know, book on the reforms that they did. Quite a very complimentary book. Didn't really talk about too many of the problems along the way, but Georgia has been very successful in fighting petty corruption, and you know, why not? Hats off to them for it.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and I do think that a lot of countries. I certainly think that a lot of countries, are more likely to listen to Georgia than various American and Northern European advisors talk about those sorts of things. So, I mean, I really do think there is a role for Georgia to play now. Karel de Gucht, as far as I can tell, the EU Trade Commissioner or something like that, who was visiting Georgia and said that the DCFTA negotiations have officially started.
Apparently, Georgia has set a very ambitious timeline and hopes
to sign something in
2013. I guess they have 4 official negotiations set up for 2012.
Well, why not? And these guys like moving quick, and be nice to do that before the presidential elections. I hope it goes well, and I hope things go along well with the Americans also, which, as you now heard from the Obama speech, that the free trade discussion is starting with the U.S. Big mess around the Petra Castle in Ajara. Newspaper Batumelevi said that it was given for a lease for 50 years for one lotti to a Ukrainian company, which is going to have to invest supposedly $500,000 to make some tourism center with restaurants in it. It was built in the 6th century. Let's hope they pay attention to the historical aspects of the thing and don't, I don't know. Who knows?
I haven't even heard of that place before, but is there a religious institution also?
I'm sure there's
something historically religious related.
Yeah, probably.
To it.
I don't know. So I saw a picture of it. It looked kind of cool. The municipality of Kobuleti sold 3 hectares of seafront land for $1,600,000 to the head of Aversi, Pata Kurtanidze, allegedly to put a 5-star hotel in. People I know say that land was worth a lot more than that. So, I don't know. We'll have to see. And I wonder what responsibilities the municipality of Kobuleti has in terms of selling something like that. But anyway.
Yeah, because you would think it would be,
Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't they auction it? I mean, if they own it, I think that would be a national asset, but
Ministry of Economic Development would initiate
something like that.
Yeah.
Misha mentioned that Javadi Monastery in Israel, which is a very old, very important monastery, that it would be placed under Georgian control. It was built with the support of Georgian kings and was really sort of a center of Georgian cultural in the Holy Land for centuries. It's a really big deal.
Is this the one that had the painting of Rustavelli, or no? There was the one
that's
someone else somewhere.
No,
else.
Wasn't that the Church of the Holy Sepulchre or some church in the Jerusalem?
Okay, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah. Democracy and Freedom Watch, dfwatch.net or something, writes about this. Anyway, the Israeli government says no. The uh, and Foreign Minister Vashadze is visiting Israel, meets with President Shimon Peres. God, Shimon Peres is still a president of Israel? Well, that guy's been around for a long time. They're talking about visa-free regime. The Azerbaijani ambassador to Iran said that $1.6 billion arms deal with Israel announced Sunday was to, and I quote, liberate occupied Azerbaijani land, according to the Iranian news agency. There was also a very interesting report that I saw, I can't remember where, that I think was in WikiLeaks, came out with some stuff from Stratfor, the Texas-based kind of creepy, I don't know, intelligence analyst people, that said that Israel sold Georgia a bunch of drones, that they gave Russia the codes to neutralize the drones in exchange for Russia giving the codes to neutralize drones that they had sold to Iran, or something like that. Sounds very Israeli. I don't know. Anyway, that was mentioned in a leaked email of Stratfor in WikiLeaks.
What people spend their time on.
Exactly. I mean, you know, does the Georgia relationship with Russia really need a bunch of Israeli drones? I mean, is that so useful? You know, I mean, yes, okay, sure, they've got a right to have them, but I don't know. I mean, we're not hard security experts here, but, you know, where's the love, you know? The Georgia Defense Ministry has unveiled its Lazika that Misha tested himself. It's a 14-ton military transport vehicle.
Any idea who it's for? Where are they going to sell that?
I don't know, man. I have no idea. The head of parliament, Dr. Bakradze, visited Chokhatauri, where he opened the Burchiladze Street, who died in the war with the Bolsheviks and Red Army, one of the Junkers. There were no questions. He complained about the EU, about EU support, saying that Georgia only got $3 billion after the war, while Greece had received $130 billion just a few days ago. But Georgia is developing because the people are patient, while nobody can help the Greeks since they're aggressive and impatient. It was really pretty insulting. He said that, you know, if Georgians had behaved like that, that Georgia would be like Somalia.
That's really unnecessary and so overly simplistic. It's, yeah.
I mean, I think part of it is that, you know, this crowd doesn't really get out of Tbilisi too much, and they go to some place like Chokhatauri and don't realize that, like, you know, that it's going to end up somewhere other than just Guria news, you know, and somebody films it and it gets translated and goes here and there. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, hey, we're in a globalized world now. There's a lot of movement of information, you know. I happen to know a lot of people in Greece, since we can check IP addresses, actually listen to this podcast, you know. So, anyway, gentlemen, tone it down a little bit.
But also with the victimization kind of line, I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's not so helpful. Not so helpful. There were banners for a hotline to the national movement in the Duchetti Free Dinner for Socially Vulnerable Citizens Hall. That was, you know, aside from being illegal, there was another one somewhere that it was reported, and then they pulled the phone numbers. But that season's starting, I guess.
Yeah, this reminded me, actually, of those soup kitchens that were started back in 2005 or 2006. You remember it was for socially vulnerable and pensioners, whatnot, and that people were supposedly able to come and get a free dinner. If you remember, we actually tried to go to Signaghi.
Yeah, that's right.
Signaghi,
right? Yeah,
check it out. And there was no one in it.
Because we wanted a free dinner. Net Gazeti reports that a collective center on Chakhtavadze Avenue in Tbilisi collapsed. That's an IDP center that collapsed, but nobody was killed. I don't know if anybody was injured. Minister of Education Dima Shashkin had an online conference where he answered questions. According to Liberali, he avoided some of the questions, like, for example, what exactly are the responsibilities of the mandateurs? Or, as the ministry prefers to call them in English, the resource officers. I was using air quotes there. By the way, speaking of the Ministry of Education, I've heard that there's a discussion afoot to get rid of subject entrance exams for university entrance, and they're talking about just a general abilities test like the GRE or something like that. I mean, a high school version of it.
Well, that that is so interesting. I mean, I had been involved through TI, of course, back in the day, or looking at the reform of the exam system and monitoring the actual process. And I think that if you're talking about removing everything but the general abilities, I mean, you're really talking about restructuring the entire university admissions process. Because
and therefore the entire high school system.
Right. I mean, you can't use just the one exam because Georgia, I mean, something that people should realize is that Georgians don't really use any sort of extracurricular activities. There's no real application process. It's all test-based now. Everything is centralized. All of this was kind of taken away from the universities as part of the anti-corruption campaign, which is fairly well outlined, I think, well outlined in the World Bank report that came out recently. But if you narrow it down so much, I mean, there's so little that kids are going to be able to show that they've done, or, you know, why they're worthy, or, you know, why they should be going to, or why they should be accepted to certain programs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just a rumor. I don't know, but it seemed a little strange. I mean, the logic behind that, you know, there's not much of a strategy. I mean, maybe there is a strategy for the Ministry of Education, but it's not written down anywhere that anybody can actually see, which is unfortunate. AirZena, the Georgian airline company, has financial problems. They have suspended their flights to Paris until May due to low demand because of a decrease in flow of passengers. So instead of three times a week, it's once a week, which is really not sustainable. I mean, why would, you know, people, why don't you just fly through Munich or something like that? Or Amsterdam.
Well, that's what's going to happen.
Right, exactly. I don't really know the AirZena deal. I don't really care so much who I fly on, but I know a lot of people say they don't want to fly AirZena. Is that because of, like, canceled or late flights, or is it because it's just bad, or,
I don't know exactly, but if I were to make a guess, I would say it's probably because of the planes, and maybe the fact that it's the former Soviet, right, that was privatized, and so, I mean,
they're not grown-up planes. I mean, they're Boeings or Airbus or something like that, but it's
But
not.
Where are they coming from? I mean, because you can look up the exact plane that you're going to be taking, actually.
Right.
You can see where
they've
it came
been around
from.
For a while.
Yeah, I mean, so if it was flying around China for the last 10 years, then.
Right.
Literally, like, that's
could be.
Been
I
one of the planes that I've been on.
I don't know. Anybody who knows anything about AirZena planes, let us know. But I had a couple of people say that they try to avoid AirZena. Anyway, the big news, Bank of Georgia is now listed on the London Stock Exchange, the real one. They were listed on the AIM before, which is kind of like it's sort of like the New York Stock Exchange compared with the NASDAQ. You know, to be listed on the London Stock Exchange is a big deal. It requires, most importantly, I think, for a Georgian company, it requires an enormous amount of transparency. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have, you know, really huge reporting requirements and things like that. Now, one thing I don't understand about that is I have heard that, you know, that the in terms of stuff that's on Bank of Georgia's books, that some of their, you know, the valuations are a little optimistic. You know, I'm sure that's true for a lot of different banks, and I don't know enough about banking to know exactly how they figure that out. But it does mean to be listed on the London Stock Exchange, aside from it being expensive, it's a very, very big deal and a good precedent. I mean, I saw in the press release 95% of their shares are liquid, and they think that this will create a great deal of liquidity and whatever else. And the shares really have gone up a lot recently, so that's a great thing. Hats off to one of the early guys, the guy who brought in Lotto Gorgonese. That would be someone who heads a Firebird Fund, a fund active in the post-Soviet space, a guy named Ian Hay, graduate of Wesleyan University. He's a very, very successful regional hedge fund. Anaclia Development has recently founded a state company. It is a recently founded state company. Plans to launch the construction of a hotel in the spring that will cost 11 million lari in Anaclia, which is the big tourist development, which will be between Poti and the sort of Abkhaz, you know, administrative demarcation line border thing.
You said that's a state
yes.
company?
Yes.
Interesting, because we had been wondering who was going to be doing the construction up in Anaclia.
I don't know, but there certainly seems to be, you know, a lot of construction firms, you know, well-connected to, you know, various individuals. So I don't know. Somebody smart ought to check that out. Who all these construction firms are? Like, for example, building all these police stations.
I think, you know, what they've got this big tourism strategy, or there's going to be this big push for a million tourists or something this year in 2012.
Right.
And one of the things that they were saying is that for every 1 million tourists, it means 15,000 jobs.
Well, maybe, except that anytime anybody flies in and out of the country, isn't that considered a tourist?
I think we've had this conversation before. I think that they have a bit more of a refined method of determining who's coming in.
Well, it could be. You know, why not? I mean, I'm all in favor of people coming in. Remains to be seen if they'll go to Anaclia, but yeah. I don't know. Supposedly, I've heard from some people it's a pretty beautiful spot. USAID supposedly said via Sarkay News that the EPI project has attracted $20 million in investment, or is going to attract $20 million of investment to greenhouse farming. Is that right? Can somebody check that out? I mean, how are they doing that? I'd be curious to hear if anybody knows anything about that. The U.S. has allocated $125 million grant, in what form I don't know, to develop energy infrastructure in Georgia, according to Black Sea Press. Part of the funds will be for the transmission line, Sanaki 1 and 2, owned by the Georgian State Electrical System. Millennium Challenge has a new tender out for this big educational thing that they're doing, which is the second compact. So, I mean, if you go to the Millennium Challenge Georgia website, there should be something, and you can check out what it is. There is also, interestingly, a forum that is a public forum sponsored by AmCham, the American Chamber of Commerce, where people can say, you know, yes, we're interested and whatever else.
You're talking about the technical university.
It's a technical university. There's a bunch of other stuff. And okay, some vocational things. And, you know, I don't know. It's some big sort of package. It's going to be a pretty big deal. And they're evidently, you know, already working on the campus and in Batumi and sort of going ahead with all of that. And, I mean, it will be, I think it'll end up being quite big. And Millennium Challenge is quite a bit of money, which is grant money. It's not loan money. So, and I'm a fan of that type of conditional aid where they say, you know, just here's the money and go do what you want with it. I mean, with all sorts of restrictions and things like that. But I don't know. This will be an important project. The heads of the Iranian and Georgian Chambers of Commerce have signed a memorandum of understanding in trade, agriculture, and economic cooperation, which is great. A little complicated, though, considering that basically every bank in Iran, if they transfer money to a Georgian bank, that Georgian bank will not, and they get caught, and that Georgian bank will not be able to transfer funds to and from the United States, thanks to the U.S. sanctions. But anyway, wishing the best of luck on that. Georgian government applied to UNESCO to preserve local winemaking in Kvevedis, these gigantic pots, which is sort of the way that wine has been made in Georgia since Neolithic time. And hopefully UNESCO will, you know, say, great.
Certainly. I mean, after they thumbed their nose for the
the Bagratze Cathedral in Kutaisi, like, you know, they
said, yeah, thanks to UNESCO, we don't
UNESCO
really care.
UNESCO said, like, you know, don't mess around with this, and Georgian said, no, we're going to stucco the whole thing, and UNESCO is pretty ticked off, but I don't know. We'll see what they say about that. After bakeries, evidently a fixed tax rate is going to be set for beauty salons, according to a report in Commerçant, and that will start next week.
That's a fixed sum as opposed to a percentage of earnings, right? As far as I understand.
As far as I understand, although I don't know. Okay, a couple of announcements. Hugo, is a cool movie, will be tomorrow night at Kolga by Rustavelli Metro. Ispanakhoba, which is Georgia's version of Mardi Gras. It used to be the biggest celebration in Tbilisi before the Bolsheviks took over, but then because it was sort of a pagan secular holiday and not really controlled by the church and was very inter-ethnic and went against the sort of Soviet policy of dividing ethnic groups, it was quite seriously suppressed, and sadly everybody forgot about it. So by the time independence came around in 20 years ago. Nobody remembered it, and so it is being revived at Betsy's Saturday night. Anybody who's interested in an invitation, go to Betsy's Hotel Facebook page and request one.
Is that not Shrovetide?
It's different because the calendars are different, but it's more or less the same thing. It's sort of right before the big Lent. There's several Lents in the Orthodox calendar, but it's similar to Shrovetide or Mardi Gras Carnival, all of those things more or less. I mean, it's just because everybody uses the Gregorian calendar as opposed to the Orthodox calendar. Okay, last week's question was the longest river that both starts and ends in Georgia. The answer is the Alazani, which is from Dr. Rusiko Amita G.B. Mullen. So congratulations, Kelbathan Orusudan. You've got a lifetime free, to Bealpod subscription.
I'd suspect that you gave her the answer, but I know that you didn't know.
Yeah, exactly. It was, I really didn't. And so we have verification. And it came in like 4 seconds after the podcast came out. It is not the Rioni, as a couple of you answered, although the Rioni has a higher volume of water. So we got sort of a Nile Amazon thing going here. For a bonus, what is the shortest river in Georgia? Okay. This is what I've heard. I don't know.
We're answering
it's,
now.
It's the Zischa, which is 7 meters long. How you have a 7 meter long river, I don't know, but that's what I'm told. So, the question for this week. Twice, Georgia won the famous Russian language Jūrmala song contest held in Latvia. All right? And it always seems to happen right before war breaks out. The most recent one was won by Duet Georgia in 2008. Who was it won by in 1989, and what was the name of the song? Who was it won by in 1989, and what was the name of the song? That's our question for this coming week. All right, that's it for this week. My Twitter address is at TXTBUK. That is TXTBUK. Email is tbilpod, tblpod, @gmail.com. Send us all and everything. We look forward to hearing from you. We're getting more and more stuff and very interesting stories and spins on stories from people. Last night, I forgot to pick the song before we put it on, so we put up Love Potion No. 9 from 1959 by the Clovers, not the more familiar 1964 Searchers version. This week, we'll hear Josephine by Supercat.
Original Josephine, my baby. I say I'm the king, I want to make you the queen. Long time I want to let you in, because you're so distant and clean. You see what I mean?
Whoa, 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 whoa. Yes, it needs to be that.
Oh, you mean?
Yeah,
uh-huh. That love.
Josephine, Josephine, Josephine.
cannot cheer for Tone Star.